Senate Finance and Claims will come to order. Cy, would you take the roll, please?
Vice Chair Glenn.
Here.
Vice Chair Ellis.
Here.
Senator Solomon.
Here.
Senator McGilvery.
Excused.
Senator Boldman.
Here.
Senator Bartel.
Here.
Senator Mandeville.
Here.
Senator Morgeau.
Here.
Senator Lenz.
Here.
Senator Lang.
Here.
Senator Lynch. Senator Bogner.
Here.
Senator Cuff.
Here.
Senator Flowers.
Here.
Senator Fuller.
Here.
Senator Vance.
Here.
Senator Pope.
Here.
Senator Wellborn.
Excused.
Chairman Esp.
Here. We have a quorum. Senator Lang is back. Things are looking up. Senator Lynch is here. The L's are here.
Lenz has been here.
Yeah, Lenz is here right away. So, members of the committee, we have three bills today. We're going to start with Representative Bertolio's. We don't have the bills in front of us, but if you have any memory at all, you know, Friday afternoon we heard the bills. And so by the time we're done, we'll have the bill in front of us. Is that all right with everybody, or do you want to wait? Representative Bertolio, you can open on your bill, House Bill 612.
Good morning. Happy Monday morning, Senate Finance. My name is Marta Bertolio. For the record, it's spelled B-E-R-T-O-G-L-I-O, and I'm honored to represent House District 75, which is a large portion of Jefferson County, from Montana City down to Whitehall. Today, I bring to you House Bill 612, revising insurance coverage requirements for self-management training and education for diabetes. So House Bill 612 is an update bill to ensure that people with diabetes are receiving appropriate number of diabetes self-management education and support hours. This is a change that applies to state-regulated private insurance. The change is from $250 per patient to the recommended 20 visits now. This change aligns with Medicare and current standards of care recommendation, which is 20 visits. And then it also allows for 12 visits after the first year you're diagnosed. The $250 current benefit has been in place for 20 years. And in today's healthcare dollars, that's only one to one and a half hours of diabetes self-management education. Studies show that these 20 visits or more of initial self-management education are and adequate ongoing visits for diabetes self-management education actually reduces costs and improves outcomes down the road. This is just an update bill to ensure that people are able to get the recommended visits of self-management care. And with that, I will close. I'm not close. It's Monday. Sit for proponents, opponents, and informational.
We would take it as a close. Proponents of the bill.
It is Monday. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Scott Bollinger, for the record, B-O-U-L-A-N-G-E-R, here today on behalf of the American Diabetes Association, supporting the bill and help with any questions. It's a more of an update to modernize the language with the Medicare language and billing. So hope for a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Katya, is there anybody online on House Bill 612?
Mr. Chair, it doesn't look so, even though right now one person who is on Zoom raised her hand, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Lyons, are you informational?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am for informational purposes today.
Just go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us you are for informational.
Perfect. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Shauna Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, Director of Budget and Planning with the University System Commissioner of Higher Ed, available for any questions for the MUS group insurance plan that you have this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Any opponents in the room? Opponents? Seeing none, informational witnesses in the room. Seeing none. Questions from the committee? Representative, I have a question for you. The fiscal note is about roughly $120 to $130 million a year, and you had a rebuttal. Can you just explain your rebuttal?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was right before transmittal, and they came to me and said, here's your fiscal note. I need it in the next half day. And I would have to say a rookie mistake on my part. Looking at the fiscal note and looking at one of the pages, I looked at it. This is worst-case scenario, which, of course, we have to plan for worst-case scenario, that everybody does the 20 visits. And I just know from my experience, definitely I had someone diagnosed in my family, and that 1.5 hours is not enough. But I was thinking 20 visits, is that going to be a lot? Well, then after I did the rebuttal, I talked to people, and they actually use those visits because it is an ongoing struggle trying to keep your blood sugars in line and different ways you can management from exercise to eating. And so that's where I was with the rebuttal.
So, Representative, you think it's fairly accurate then?
I do,
all
Chair.
Right.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative, you may close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, this is an update bill, and I think it's very important. It is more preventative, which down the road, I just talked to a doctor yesterday, just happened to run into a doctor, and I was talking about that I was going to present this morning. And they started going on about all the things down the road. If you don't take care of this up front, that the cost is so much more. So I think this really is an important bill to pass. So with that, I appreciate your time, and I would appreciate a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. This closes the hearing on House Bill 612. Somebody has Representative Laura Smith's text number. You might text or tell her bill's up.
Getting hungry.
Members of the committee, we'll just stand at ease until we get a sponsor or the bills.
Get some breakfast. What's her bill about?
Running low on vanilla folders.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay,
what you want to plan.
Maybe right after this, because I think you're so sure.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Sounds good.
Yeah, she said she...
How long? When's the sponsor coming? Do you know when the sponsor's coming?
I don't know about it either.
This is the one that adds niece and nephew to the incest law.
What's that?
It adds niece
and nephew. Oh, that's the bill she's bringing?
To incest law.
Yeah.
That one's kind of a no-brainer.
Which way does it add it?
It adds it in that it qualifies as incest.
If you're the incestor or the incestee?
If you are the incestor. I believe.
I think it should be either way.
Maybe it's either.
I'm going to vote against it because it's not. Because it doesn't go far enough.
Of course, with her.
Members of the committee, let's just come back to order. We could do executive action on House Bill 612 now that we have the bill and the fiscal note in front of us. Go ahead, Vice Chair Glim.
Mr. Chairman, I move do concur on House Bill 612. This was the one we just heard, so it should be fresh in your mind.
It is. So any discussion on the bill? It was 35-15 on the floor.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I will say that it's quite a bit of money. You know, it's a pretty fair increase, but the last statement she's made is very true, that being ignored or denied, and I can speak from experience, that you let it go and the expense gets bigger and more troublesome. And I think it's probably a pretty decent, and it is afflicting our society today so widely, more so than anybody believes it. I think it's good. Worth passing.
Senator Bartell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the fiscal note part, help me clarify. So under expenditures, the others is to provide the service, and then down on description of fiscal impact, it says that the to implement the requirements is another $450 million. So is that how you're reading it? Is that how you should read it?
Senator Bartell, I think the two self-insured plans are the one is where the costs are going to be for the plan. So eventually it'll be on the people that are the premiums that they pay.
Okay, thanks.
Although it may cause a private insurance increase too. Let me read the bill, see if it applies to private. It applies to everybody, so there could be a likely increase to other insurance policies, but maybe it'll pay off in the end to reduce more intensive treatment later when you have diabetes. Further discussion?
Questions?
That's fine. Mr. Chairman, I was just going to reiterate what you said. If you catch it earlier, you save money in the long run, and I think that's exactly what you said.
Yeah. All righty. Questions been called. Do we need a roll call vote? Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Glim?
No.
Vice Chair Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Solomon?
Yes.
Senator McGilvery?
No.
Senator Boldman?
Yes.
Senator Bartell?
Yes.
Senator Mandeville?
No.
Senator Morgeau?
Yes.
Senator Lenz?
Senator Lenz votes yes by proxy.
Senator Lang?
No.
Senator Lynch?
Yes.
Senator Bogner?
No.
Senator Cuff?
Yes.
Senator Flowers?
Yes.
Senator Fuller?
Yes.
Senator Vance?
Yes.
Senator Pope?
Yes.
Senator Wellborn?
No.
Chairman Esp?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I need to change Senator Lenz to a no.
Okay. I believe that makes it 11-8.
Okay. Motion carries. House Bill 612 will go to third reading. We will move on to Representative Carlson's bill, which I believe is House Bill 891. We'll open a hearing on House Bill 891, Representative Carlson, and this is, I think, the first hearing for this bill. I don't think it's a re-referral.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the committee, I'm Representative Jennifer Carlson, House District 69, here to you with House Bill 891, and the chair is correct. This bill is not scheduled or has had a policy hearing. It's come straight to you. this bill, I'm just going to be super fast. I know everybody, you guys have a really long day. This bill came to House Appropriations as a $40 million one-time stabilization payment, which was intended to include a federal match. It was significantly amended by the House Appropriation Committee down to a $5 million lump sum that will be administrated by DPHHS based on some parameters underlined on page 2, which include nursing homes who have stayed open that are more than 60 miles from another nursing home, nursing homes in an area where the hospital is having trouble discharging patients because there is a lack of beds, et cetera. I know there's some proponents in the room. I just want to give one one personal note, since this was my bill and it did get significantly amended. I know that the Appropriations Committee has done a lot, and you guys probably are right now with Section B and rates and getting nursing homes enough money to stay open. But this problem has been going on for enough years that I really think it's appropriate to help stabilize some of these nursing homes that might just need a boost. But the rate, we all agree, needed to go up, and it hasn't gone up for some years. And this was just to mitigate that. So I'm going to sit and let you ask questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents of the bill. Welcome again.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee, Margaret MacDonald, capital M-A-C, capital D-O-N-A-L-D, with Big Sky 55 Plus. And we stand in support of this this bill. It helps deal with that period of time when we saw nursing homes essentially underwater. For that didn't just happen yesterday. That happened throughout 2022 and in the year leading up to it. And with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to share a handout that helps you kind of get a feel for the degree of inflation and workforce and other costs that these facilities were dealing with.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It just sheds a light on basically these facilities have been operating way underwater for month after month after month. And this bill helps the department to at least identify those that we might lose and try and keep their doors open for that time period before the new fiscal year starts. So I think it's an important piece of the puzzle, and I thank you for your attention to this and ask for a due pass.
Thank you. Further proponents. Katya, is there anyone online that looks like there's an informational witness?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We only have somebody from DOA. Otherwise, nobody's on Zoom for this bill.
Alrighty. Any opponents in the room? Opponents in the room? Informational witnesses on this? Mr. Hermanson.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. Gene Hermanson, H-E-R-M-A-N-S-O-N. I am the Medicaid Chief Financial Officer for Department of Public Health and available for questions.
Thank you. Further informational witnesses. Ms. Jenks. Well, she's here for 612. Okay.
It's already passed.
Oh, sorry. News you lose, I guess. Any questions for on this bill? Senator Pope.
Mr. Chair, for the sponsor. Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Senator.
Can you speak to us, Mr. Chair, whether there's a timing element? It says timely payments, I think, or timely something. But in other words, is this going to be, you know, the situation is current. Can the department spread this out over time, or can this be sort
of? I understand your question, Mr. Chair. Senator, that is actually one of my issues with this amendment. To be honest with you, it's very vague. It gives, it really just says that as the department decides to do it. And That's never been a bit, I'm not a fan of that, frankly. I think it should be written down what we're going to do and when we're going to do it and who's going to decide. And I think that's a lot better policy than saying that at their discretion they might do this one thing. And I actually was going to mention that in my close, but I don't see there being any type of requirement like that in this amendment.
Mr. Chair, may I have a
follow-up?
Would you have a suggestion to the committee of what a timeline might look like?
Well, frankly, I did in the original bill, but it was amended out. So, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Senator Bartell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor. Representative, so with this bill, how many nursing homes in the state of Montana will have access to this funding?
I don't know. I can't even know the answer to that. Even if I knew, Mr. Chair, I apologize. Even if you knew how many nursing homes were farther than 60 miles away from another nursing home that was in the same boat, it really, this amendment says that the department may select the most appropriate means for distributing the funds, which may include but is not limited to. And these terms are all very vague. The bill as it was written was based on bed days provided in the last fiscal year. And that was a really much fairer and more mathematical way to do it, in my opinion, where you knew exactly what you were going to do with that money and where it was going to go and when it had to be there. And the whole point of the money was to give a boost in the arm to these facilities who are waiting for the rate increase to go in. But I'm not on appropriations, and that's what we ended up with. So as the sponsor of the bill, I kind of don't want to just say, wow, this is terrible, kill it. But at the same time, I'd really prefer to have something that was a lot more concrete that gave these facilities some certainty as to what the plan was going forward.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For the question, Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Hermanson.
Mr. Hermanson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hermanson, I kind of had the same question as Senator Bartell. I'm wondering if you could provide some information on how many nursing homes would be eligible for this and how that money would be handed out.
Mr. Chair, Senator, so in total there are approximately 60 nursing homes that are Medicaid providers, so that's the total universe. In the bill there is right priority given to two groups, those 60 miles or more from another nursing home or those where hospitals are in need of to transition individuals. In both of those categories, I don't have an exact count. We have started looking at that, but it is a handful for each of those categories. But in total, there would be up to 60 Medicaid nursing home providers.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Lang for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Ms. Carlson, please.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Carlson, nursing homes in which hospitals have a backlog of patients related to nursing home care, we heard, do you see anything in a state where maybe one large hospital could just take up the whole $5 million and getting, because I think we've heard in Billings there's 20 or 30 people could go to nursing homes right away. What would be the potential of them getting all the money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lang, I have the exact same question. I was assured in a way that was supposed to make me love this amendment that Gallatin Rest Home would qualify because they're more than 60 miles away from a nursing home that qualifies and our hospital is in the same boat. We have people sitting in the hospital at $1,800 a day where they could be in a nursing home at $300 a day with match, obviously. And we just can't put them in the nursing home because we obviously don't have the staff because the rate is too low and we're not paying enough people, so we don't have enough staff. And it's this gigantic circle jerk. And this bill, I don't see it as amended as a good solution.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Carlson, so on another avenue, if and this would be between private and what I guess I'd call community-owned or public nursing homes. You have to help me out there. But let's just say that a community-owned or a community-sponsored, would you be somewhat or could think we could design an amendment where if the community has come forth and put levies on themselves to help with the nursing home, should that or could that get a priority over one that has not taxed the community? In other words, the people have voted and say, we were willing to go further, so maybe they should get some money if they're in trouble.
Mr. Chair, Senator, part of me says, yes, I feel like that would be appropriate. However, I really just don't think it's fair to the smaller communities where they don't have the resources to raise a mill levy to do that. If you move a person from, let's just make up two towns, then you close the facility in Big Sandy and you say, well, that's no big deal, you can just go to Chester. There's a lot more at stake than how much money the nursing home is going to get when Mr. Worrell can't go see his wife because now she's 110 miles away and he doesn't drive. And so for me, we are missing a lot of the picture on this when we just try to make it about money. These nursing homes are an integral part of most of the small communities in Montana. They're important for people's lives and their families. And so, honestly, it's a huge question. I don't like envy any of you people sitting at this table, but I just feel like this amendment is really just, well, if we think we might find a reason to do it, we might give some money to some people, but we don't know who and we're not going to tell you. And I don't like that.
Further questions, Senator Flowers.
Mr. Chair, for the sponsor. Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, what was the rationale that the Appropriations Committee used for this amendment? Did they feel that your original language was too prescriptive and that's why they kind of took away all the specifics, or was it something else?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator, I can't definitively know the answer to that question, but some things that have been said to me are there are some of these nursing homes that just need to go out of business. They don't have a good business model. They're not using their money wisely. They're not doing a good job. So there's like no love lost for some of these facilities. That's been said to me. Another thing is it did have quite a high fiscal note, $40 million. However, as you all know, there's federal match for that money. So it wouldn't be, I believe it was 17 and 28 or something, 17 being the state portion, in order to do a look back and put it in the daily reimbursement rate going forward into the last 6 months is a very mathematical answer, and everybody is treated fairly, and it potentially has a federal match of 65%. So I would say if I had to say what I thought the biggest problem was, it was the amount of money.
Representative, would you care to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Hate to be so negative about my own bill. I really think that it was important to help some of these facilities. Senator Lang brought up a really good point. In the county I live in, we did raise a mill levy to help keep our nursing home open because it's important. It's not just important for employment, and it's not just important for the economy, and it's not just important so the hospital can discharge people. It's important because people will die if they don't have a place to go if they can't stay in their home. I know there's been a lot of discussion this session about in-home care and assisted living and community first choice, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not disparaging any of those ideas. They're all probably very good. But if you have a person who needs 24-hour supervised nursing care, they have to be in a nursing home. And if they are not in a nursing home, they will die. And so that's the thing we have to remember when we talk about this. It's not just about the money. But I do have a couple constructive things to say, because I do try to do that occasionally. I would like to just point out that in the notes that I didn't really share with you, because they no longer pertain to the bill as amended, there's also been a lot of conversation this session. I know Section B has talked about it a lot, is the add-on rate for nursing homes. And that is seeming like a very great idea. If you are a nursing home and you have a patient who is a difficult patient, an Alzheimer's patient, a flight risk, a person who has difficult behaviors, and we've all probably heard about that by now, I hope that there are add-ons that the nursing home can apply to receive for those people. And that increases their daily rate, basically, and helps them have the correct staff on hand to do the job. And that's very great, and I love it. However, it's not being used. And one of the things that's been said is that it is being used and there's no problems, but that's not really accurate, because it's not being used. And so I would ask all of you, regardless of what committees you otherwise sit on, that we take a look at this add-on policy and we make sure that it works for nursing homes. Because if there's a policy where you can get an add-on, but they don't know how to do it, or it's too difficult, or it requires too much paperwork, or something that is why they're not doing it, let's fix that, because that would fix a lot of the problems for a lot of nursing homes. If they could get this add-on money, which we hear is available, but they're not doing it, then let's figure out how we can fix that program so that they do it, and it increases what's already available. It increases the amount they're taking, and that would help them. And so let's do that for them, because clearly that's not happening. And the second thing I wanted to mention is, in the last couple of years, COVID, et cetera, nursing homes have had to switch from double occupancy rooms to single occupancy rooms. That's for infection control. A lot of people have taken their loved ones out of nursing homes because they're worried. And so the censuses have gone down. When the census goes down, the income goes down. They can't pay the staff because there's no income. Now the staff goes and does something else, and you have to hire travelers, and the travelers cost seven times as much. And it just goes around and around. And so my point is, during all of that stuff, there was a lot of money that was not spent that was appropriated for bed days in the last biennium. Money was spent, don't get me wrong, lots of it, but it wasn't on bed days because there weren't people in the beds. And so I would suggest that the bed days money is appropriate to give to the nursing homes that did serve bed days. And they served bed days at a very low rate. And so I feel like the original bill was pretty good, because it took some of that bed day rate money and it gave it back to the nursing homes, because it was not their fault. It wasn't bad management. It wasn't they weren't planning ahead and they did something wrong. What it was is they came down with a whole bunch of mandates on nursing homes that said you can't do what you've always been doing. And so going forward, whatever we do with this bill and whatever we do with the other bills, I would hope that the language could change from nursing homes are doing a bad job and they're not being fiscally responsible and they need to change their business model, because I don't believe it's their fault. Nursing homes have been operating for decades well, and this came down on them just like it came down on everyone else. We're not ragging on the schools because they needed more money or this and that, but for some reason we're blaming the nursing homes for a problem they didn't create. And so there might be some problems, and I wouldn't disagree with that, but I hope that in the future the language can move from they should just go out of business because they're not being responsible with the money to what can we do to make sure that every dollar on the table is being spent in an appropriate way to help these facilities keep our elderly Montanans in their communities where they can live out the rest of their life around their family and their community. And I appreciate you all listening to me. And I don't know what you're going to do with the bill, but I'm sure you'll come up with something great. And I appreciate your time and have a great day. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. This closes the hearing on House Bill 891.
It's a weekend long.
So we're waiting for the sponsor. Representative Smith should be here momentarily. Let's take a recess till 10 minutes to, will that give her enough time?
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a recess till 10 minutes to 9. All righty, Senate Finance and Claims will come back to order. We'll open the hearing on House Bill 743, Representative Smith.
All right, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Great. My name is Laura Smith, last name spelled as you would expect. I represent HD 79 here on the west side of Helena and out to Remini. I'm here today on HB 743, which is actually, I would say, the one bill that I have that I can truthfully say is a simple bill. It is the addition of niece and nephew as victims in the incest statute. And so I'll just briefly tell you the origin of the bill, which is there was a charge and a conviction on a very horrible incest case that was in part overturned because they later realized that niece and nephew weren't included in the incest statute. Majority of states have incest, include an incest niece and nephew. And so I'll go straight to the fiscal note. So I will tell you, this is one of the first fiscal notes that I had this session. And I looked at it, and my first impression was, well, they've accurately stated the cost of incarceration. But what you'll see in the rebuttal, and I understand it's in your packets, and if you don't have it, I have several copies. What you'll see in the rebuttal is a recognition that the fiscal note is pretty dramatically overstated, which is... because in an incest case, it's not that these individuals have not been incarcerated in the past. If it was a niece or a nephew, it's because they've been incarcerated under a different sexual assault statute. And so what the fiscal note really doesn't account for is that these wouldn't be new individuals, as the fiscal note states, but they would be individuals who... I would say have a 99% chance of having been charged under a different sexual assault statute. And so I guess what I'll say in relation to the fiscal note is that while it captures accurately the cost of incarceration, it doesn't accurately capture the reality of these cases. So just an example, if there's an individual who... there's an investigation, they have probable cause, and they charge that individual. If this bill didn't pass, they would be charged under a different statute, so sexual assault, sexual intercourse without consent. What it wouldn't do is account for the severity of the crime. So as you'll see, the penalties are more aligned in the incest statute to be concomitant with the nature and the abuse of power and relationship in incest. And so with that, I think I'll sit for questions, and thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Representative. Are there proponents for House Bill 743? Proponents in the room? Katya, is there anyone online on this bill?
Mr. Chair, there is nobody on Zoom to speak on this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Opponents in the room? Opponents? Informational witnesses?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Natalie Smitham, S-M-I-T-H-A-M. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Corrections, here to answer any questions on the fiscal note.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. And any further informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Ms. Smitham, please. Smitham. Mr. Chairman and Ms. Smitham, we have two words into this bill that create a lot of fiscal responsibility, a nephew or a niece. My question to you is, how many years has this bill been in effect without these two words? And if in your tenure at Corrections, how many people have been outside the law because they were a niece or a nephew?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lang, I don't know that I have data on that specific information. I can tell you that approximately 14 people per year are convicted under the incest statute, but I don't have data as to how many people were outside of it. For purposes of the fiscal note, we assumed that it would add an additional four convictions per year.
So follow up, Mr. Chairman. So what you're saying is presently there's about 14 people that use this bill as it was written yesterday or in law. And this could possibly change it, but you don't know what it could be.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lang, that's correct.
Thank you.
Further question? Senator Solomon.
Mr. Chairman, from sponsor.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, representative. Can you, I'm just a little bit confused because you talked about you could add on niece and nephew, and that would sometimes make the sentence different. So I'm just asking, would that make the sentence longer, i.e. more expensive?
Mr. Chair, Senator Solomon, yes. And so the idea and the incentive behind the bill is we recognize, because of the nature of incest, that we understand the intensity and the sort of manipulation of relationship that is inherent in that relationship. I believe it's over 30 states include niece and nephew. But to answer your question, yes.
Further questions? Senator Bartel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Representative.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bartel, good morning.
So just a quick question. If the person that commits the offense, if can't they be charged with other felonies if nephew or niece are not included in incest?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes. And I think the distinction here is they can be charged, but there's no guarantee that the sentence will be equal to the severity and the nature of the incest crime.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions, Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith. My first question is line 12, cohabits with. Is cohabits defined somewhere?
Senator, which page are you on?
The first page, line 12.
Mary's cohabitate.
First word.
Oh, cohabits. Mr. Chair, Senator, I would have to confirm and look that up.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I wouldn't want to criminalize someone who has their nephew or niece just simply living with them in the house. Also, Mr. Chair, if I could have a follow-up.
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, will this statute then be broad enough after this change? I mean, there's a lot of other relationships that aren't anticipated even with adding a nephew or niece. I mean, cousins, step-cousins, great-nephew or niece, stuff like that. So does this fix all of the issues, or does this need to be broader yet?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is a great question. I would say that when I did research on this, the offenses that were most common that weren't accounted for were the niece or nephew, which is not to say that the other offenses couldn't be accounted for or included.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate that question. Thank you.
So, Representative, the other statutes that you would prosecute under, what's the maximum sentence under those statutes?
Mr. Chair, I anticipated this question about 30 seconds before I stood up and was only able to get to one of them. May I email you the penalties for, there are quite a few other sexual assault statutes. Well, there are three main ones. May I email those to you?
Well, we're going to need to know it in the next 10 minutes, so if you got it in here.
Okay. I can look. If you don't mind, I just take maybe a minute or 2 minutes to look up those three.
I mean, Representative Smith, your bill potentially could throw you in prison for life.
Correct.
Is that possible under the other statutes for the first offense?
Mr. Chair, for the first offense, I do not believe that it could, but may I confirm? I'll look those up really quickly. You can time me. It'll probably take about 90 seconds.
Okay, you got 2 minutes. We'll wait. Senator Mandeville.
Mr. Chair, I was able to find a definition of cohabit, if anyone wants to know what that is besides
me. We'd be
me.
Delighted.
All right.
Can you do it in less than 2 minutes?
I can. This is in 45.2.101. It's sub 6. Cohabit means to live together under the representation of being married. So it is more than tighter than just.
Mr. Chairman, under, I couldn't hear the last part of that.
Under the representation of being married.
Married.
Yeah. So not just being living in the same house. You're presenting yourself as being married. And the common law marriage bill went down, so we don't have to worry about that one either.
No, I was thinking of some of the more, some of the other modern relationships that are frequently talked about.
Any further observations on the fiscal impact of the bill? In other words, you're going to keep people in prison longer, I think is.
But Mr. Chairman, this bill is existing code except for the words niece or nephew, correct?
Yeah.
And we're just looking at the money?
Right, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
In relation to your question, the answer is no. There is no other statute that involves life imprisonment, which makes sense to me, given the severity of incest. The penalties in the three other statutes contain a range from 6 months up to 100 years with the first 25, they're not being eligible for parole, and that's in relation to age. So there is no other statute that captures the consequence articulated in the incest statute.
Alrighty, thank you for the questions, Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Smith, so any offense under the present law without the niece or nephew, do they go on a sex offender list?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lang, under the existing incest statute?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Were the questions seeing none? Representative, would you care to close?
I'll be brief. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I appreciate the very thoughtful questions on this bill, recognizing the importance of holding individuals accountable for offenses that can really impact individuals for the rest of their lives. And I thank you for your time. I close.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 743. We will, I think we'll recess until further notice today. I think we have potentially four bills off the floor today that at some point in the day will come down and hear. We can do executive on the two that we have remaining this morning, this afternoon. And hopefully we won't be here all night. There may be more than one board. So with that, we're in recess until further notice off the floor.